Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Wednesday, February 12, 2018. The time is 9:15 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this morning, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Good morning.
Senator Machicki.
Good morning.
Senator Stevens.
Good morning.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning, all. We should be joined shortly by Senator Bishop. I do want to apologize to those that have been waiting for our hearing to start. There are several of us that have been meeting on a regular basis at 7 a.m. working on a sexual assault workplace policy subcommittee, and that meeting was extended for a little bit this morning, so I apologize for the delay. On today's agenda, we have SB 155, Real Estate Appraiser Management Companies, and HB 195, Insurers Use of Credit History Scores. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? If you're joining us off-net or online, we're in Juneau, Alaska, the fifth floor in the Senate Finance Committee room. I'd like to bring an act relating to the registration and regulation of real estate appraiser management companies related to the establishment of fees by the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, relating to the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers, and relating to real estate appraisers. Welcome, Senator Bishop.
Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chairman. Senator Meyer, Edra, if you could join him at the microphone. Senator Meyer, if you could present your bill, and then we'll do a sectional analysis going forward. Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Finance Committee. And thank you for hearing Senate Bill 155. Senate Bill 155, as you said, Madam Chair, has to do with the regulation of real estate appraisal management companies. And it was recently brought to our attention that due to the Dodd-Frank Act in 2010, that there's a federal deadline looming for states to put into place a comprehensive regulations regarding appraisal management companies. The deadline is August of this year. Now, recently we have been informed that the administration has asked for an extension. Whether they get it or not, I guess it's still too early to tell. Appraisal management companies are business entities that administer networks of independent appraisers to fulfill real estate appraisals assignments on behalf of the lenders. These companies will no longer be allowed to perform residential appraisals in the state of Alaska after August 20th, 2018, without the passage of this bill. And this could cause problems for realtors, bankers, lenders, and Alaskans who are hoping to get a loan, which could have an adverse impact on our economy. Alaska is only one of four states, plus Washington, D.C., that have yet to pass a comprehensive legislation. The other three states, Massachusetts, New York, and Ohio, are in the process, similar to us, passing legislation this year. While generally I'm not for increasing government regulation, but I believe this bill will help promote public trust and consumer protection and establish an oversight and enforcement where there is none today. So with that, Madam Chair, that's just a brief summary of the bill. Again, this is in reaction to the Dodd-Frank Act in 2010. And with your permission, Madam Chair, I'll have my staff then walk us through the sectional summary.
Are there questions from the sponsor of Senate Bill 155? Edra, if you could place yourself on the record. Senator Olson, did you have a question?
Yes, I did, Madam Chair. Senator Meyer, you talked about the independent appraisers that are doing residential appraisals. Does that affect commercial properties as well?
Senator Olson, through the chair, no, I don't believe it does, but I think Edra is going to go through the sectional analysis, and I think that will answer your question better.
Okay.
But I think it is just for residential, yes.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. And we do have some folks for invited testimony that may be able to provide additional information on that point, Senator Olson. Edra, your name for the record, and then a sectional analysis.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, Edra Morledge, staff to Senator Meyer. Just to briefly answer your question through the chair, Senator Olson, this only applies to residential real estate. So I'll begin the sectional summary here. Section 1 amends AS 08-1065, which is the centralized licensing statute, to include a new subsection J to allow the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to establish a fee for regulatory costs and a mechanism for reporting those fees. Section 2 is a new subsection J, which requires the department to establish a registry fee as required by the federal government and permits the department to remit those fees to the federal government. Section 3 amends the powers and duties of the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers to require regulations for appraisal management companies. Section 4 authorizes the board to examine records of appraisal management companies and requires those companies to submit information to the board, and also allows investigations of alleged violations. Sections 5 and 6, which is the bulk of the bill, from page 3, line 28, to page 9, line 18, these sections add provisions regarding registration of appraisal management companies, including surety bond requirements, criminal background check requirements, mandatory reporting requirements, retention of records and inspection requirements, reporting requirements for federally regulated real estate appraisal management companies, exemptions, prohibited practices, and disciplinary proceedings. Section 7 are definitions, including appraisal management services, appraisal panel, company, controlling person, and principal dwelling. And Section 8 allows for fingerprinting of a controlling person of an appraisal management company through the Department of Public Safety. Section 9 allows real estate appraisal management company registry fees to be included in the definition of program receipts and non-general fund program receipts. And finally, Section 10 is the applicability clause, stating that this act applies to a person offering or providing appraisal management services on or after the effective date of the act.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Are there questions from committee members on the sectional analysis? I would advise members we'll go over the fiscal notes at another date and time on this. With that, I'd like to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 155, an act relating to real estate appraisal management. Is there anyone here in Juneau? I'm sorry, we have invited testimony. Let me go to that first. Mark Schiffman is online from Minneapolis. He's the executive director of the Real Estate Evaluation Advocacy Association. Mr. Schiffman, if you could identify yourself for the record, I'll acknowledge that so that you know that we can hear you and you can hear us.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Schiffman. I represent the Real Estate Valuation Advocacy Association, better known as REVA.
Welcome to Senate Finance. Your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On behalf of the appraisal management companies that are represented by REVA, and those are 27 or so of the largest AMCs across the country, we are strong supporters of Senate Bill 155. We are in the awkward position of advocating for our own self-regulation by all 50 states, and that has been one of our core missions over the last several years since Dodd-Frank's enactment. We have worked to ensure regulation similar to S-155 and its companion in many other states. They comply with the federal minimum standards that have been adopted and put in place a regulatory scheme similar to the other 46 states that have adopted legislation. As Senator Meyer had mentioned, there are now 46 states with laws in place to regulate AMCs. The other remaining four states are in the process of passing legislation, Alaska included, and we are also pursuing regulation in the District of Columbia. Kind of peel back the layers of why this is important. The most important aspect of what an AMC does is that it is provides consumer protections, again, to ensure appraiser independence in the residential appraisal process. And so by that, it comes out of Dodd-Frank and concerns over appraisals and undue influence. And so by inserting a independent third party, it creates a very valuable firewall to allow lenders and consumers to get the valuations they need, while appraisers will not have to address undue influence. And so it's one of the primary benefits of appraisal management companies. The growth of appraisal management companies coincides with Dodd-Frank. We are valuable third parties that work for lenders to achieve their objectives with consumer appraisals. AMCs are integrated into the mortgage lending process as well as secondary markets. The products and services provided by AMCs ensure proper valuations for the investment marketplace. So it's an important piece, and we are very much supportive of minimal regulations that have been proposed in Alaska.
Arthur,
with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us online. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Stevens.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. You're in a unique position to see all of the states that are involved in this, and you said minimal requirements. In your experience, I actually probably don't know. We have a fiscal note that shows that it needs it require one full-time occupational licensing examiner. Is that your experience in other states? Does it require a full-time new position for this responsibility?
Thanks for your question, Senator. It's hard to I haven't seen the fiscal note, but I'd say that for any state that takes this on, there are requirements that are involved. AMC regulation is self-funding, so our members that do pay the licensing fees do fund the program. It's not unusual that additional staff may be needed, but it would really depend on the existing staffing model, and so it varies from state to state. But certainly the thought of adding staff is not unusual.
Senator Stevens, follow-up?
No, thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Are there additional questions from committee members? Mr. Schiffman, thank you for joining Senate Finance today. The next invited testimony is William or Bill Escoggin from Troutman Sanders Law Offices in North Carolina. He's representing the Real Estate Evaluation Advocacy Association. Mr. Escoggin, are you there?
Madam Chair, I'm here. I was simply available for questions. Mr. Schiffman handled the presentation and testimony, but I stand by for any questions.
Thank you very much. The sponsor had provided your name as possible input on this, so we appreciate your standing by for questions. The next person on invited testimony is David Derry. He's the chair of the Certified Real Estate Appraiser Board. He's out of Kenai. Mr. Derry, welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wanted to extend, first of all, our thanks to Senator Meyer for sponsoring the bill and state that the State Appraisal Board, the Alaska Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers, does support the bill, and we are ready to assume oversight of AMCs. The way this bill and legislation came to pass as part of the Dodd-Frank Act, appraisal certification boards, state by state, were tasked with or paired with the oversight of AMCs. And one of the things that Senator Meyer mentioned here as far as the being one of four states that has not enacted AMC legislation, part of that is due to the regulations evolving. It's taken some time for that to evolve from the federal level, even though Dodd-Frank was enacted in 2010. I would also mention that the Alaska chapter of the Appraisal Institute did propose a similar bill in 2014 to establish oversight for AMCs, but the chapter was unable to find a sponsor, and the bill never proceeded. So we are in favor of the bill. I would just also reiterate that the appraisal board is self-funded and has been since inception in 1991. There's a couple of recommended changes that we have to the bill from the appraisal board, and number one is the issue of fingerprinting that's identified on section 135, starts on page 5, item C, and then on to page 6. It establishes that fingerprinting is required for registration. This is also an issue that had come up to become a certified appraiser in Alaska, and we have received a confirmation from the appraisal subcommittee, which is an oversight entity, federal entity for our board, that we do not need to have fingerprinting included. We have a fitness questions as part of our process for appraisers, which would also extend to AMCs. So a fingerprinting requirement, if not needed, it could become somewhat cumbersome, particularly since there are no AMCs that are actually Alaska-based. So we'd be dealing with AMCs from a myriad of states applying then to do work in Alaska. So that's one of our recommendations. Recommendation number two is regarding the bonding amount. It's listed as item number 8, again under section 135, page 5. It sets the bond amount at $25,000. We recommend that the bond amount be established at $150,000. And our reason for establishing the higher bond amount is to provide more of a fiduciary cushion for the state should there be any issues with the appraisal management companies that would be operating. Again, there are no appraisal management companies in Alaska based, so we're dealing with lower 48 companies to start with. One of the issues here is that making sure that we don't have AMC that would default and not then pay appraisers that might be working for them under a contractual relationship. And appraisers in Alaska, because of the cost of going to rural areas and servicing the state and the airfare requirements, it's often that the airfare is more than the appraisal fee. So it's easy for an AMC, if they were doing a large volume of business, to develop basically an accounts payable that would easily exceed a $25,000 amount. So we're asking for the $150,000 bonding amount. Just by comparison, the state of Washington has established a $100,000 bond on their AMC legislation. So with that, I'll close my comments. Thank you. And I'm available, for, of course, for any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Derry. I have a question for clarity. The board that is referenced in Section 3 is an existing board, and we are modifying the powers and duties of that existing board. Is that accurate?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Mr. Derry, is there another board that is created that is inside of state government anywhere?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I didn't quite understand the question, but no, there is no other board.
That was the question.
The appraisal board, the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers is the current board that regulates certification of appraisers in the state of Alaska, and the AMC regulation would come under our board.
Thank you. There was a little bit of unclarity in whether, when we referenced, or through your testimony, when it was referenced, the AMC board, there was some consideration at our table whether that was a second board or not. And so I just wanted to clarify that you are the board that is taking on the responsibility of managing this.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct.
Thank you. Are there other questions for Mr. Derry? Seeing and hearing none, I do have one more person for invited testimony from the sponsor, Greg Deal. Greg, are you in the room or online? Okay, that was under invited testimony, so Mr. Deal may not have been able to call in this morning. I'd like to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 155. Is there anyone here in Juneau or online or off net that would like to provide further testimony on Senate Bill 155. Anyone at all? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. I'm sorry, Ms. Chambers, please. Ms. Chambers, your name for the record, and then please provide his comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Chambers, Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. I just wanted to support Mr. Derry's testimony as the chair of our board and provide a little bit of administrative feedback on the bill. As Mr. Derry, Chairman Derry mentioned, the bill is supported by the board, and that there is an element of urgency to allow non-federally regulated AMCs to operate in the state after the deadline, the federal deadline that's been set. Our division has been working with the sponsor to work on a few amendments to the bill that are needed to be able to roll out this legislation, should it be passed by the legislature. One change that's needed is the authority to set fees to recoup the cost. Right now, the bill proposes a change in fee-setting authority that allows us to pass through the federally required fee that goes to the federal government, but not to set a or recover a licensing fee to cover those costs. So we are working with the sponsor on adding that. We've also, as Senator Meyer testified, we've also recently been made aware of and requested an extension to the effective date, which will be deliberated by the Federal Appraisal Subcommittee in March, that would allow the effective date of AMC regulation to take place in about a year. This would allow the board and the department, should transition language be added to the bill, to adopt regulations and set fees. So those are in place when the bill becomes effective. As we've seen with other programs in the past, making the fee and the regulations due on the date that licensure is due is confusing to those who we would be regulating and would like to be able to do that ahead of time so everyone is aware, and it's a very transparent process. As I mentioned, we need transitional language to adopt those regulations prior to the effective date. And I did want to speak to the fiscal note as well. We did support one PCN position in the fiscal note, and we don't believe that a full-time person is needed to be added to our staff. However, because we are receipt supported and our fiscal notes operate a little bit differently than some, we're unable to request half of a person. So what we have proposed is to request an additional occupational licensing examiner to add to our staff. That person would add about half of their time to this program, which is already a need that's in place. And then there's no shortage of work to be done in our division, and we would charge the remaining portion of that person's time through positive timekeeping to another board that they might be working on. Again, all of this would be supported by licensing fees, and no general fund is being requested. So I appreciate your allowing me to testify and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers. The bill is in the possession of the Senate Finance Committee, so if you would work with our office, we'll work with the sponsor on any amendments.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Chambers, as you look at what's gone on, the reference by the previous testimony or one of the persons that testified where they were going to be self-regulating, do you find that a problem with a state the size of Alaska with an entity that is self-regulating where things can go awry if there's some rogue appraiser out there?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, this program would be self-funded and would be regulated by the existing Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers, so self-regulation might be a little bit of a misnomer. It would be governed by our existing board process.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, of course, we're quite concerned about adding personnel. I understand your point, I think, that this is really only require a halftime person. So what is this person going to do the rest of the day?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I'm so glad you asked. We have in the past along the way attempted to be, as I believe most state agencies do, be very conservative in our fiscal notes and have been too conservative in some regards. One example would be in 2014 when the massage therapy board was created. We anticipated about 600 licensees, and now we have 1,400 licensees. And so we have the same person actually who is managing the appraisal program, a board and all of the licensing that goes along with it at halftime. And then that person also with the other half regulates or manages massage therapy. So we did not ask for an additional position for the massage therapy board. We thought we could absorb it with 600. We had a far more robust program than what we had anticipated and could use more hands on deck to make sure that we're delivering the service that's expected by the board and the public.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers. How many licensees do you expect, and what would the, if I divide out that 111 initial and 97,000 afterward, what would be the approximate cost of licensing?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, we are working on developing what that license fee might look like. We've been told by the industry that we could expect about 200 new licensees. Along with that is, of course, the support to the board, which our licensing examiners directly deliver, which would be implementation of a new program and any additional time that may be spent on the program would be beneficial. This is our only federally regulated licensing program out of all of our boards, so it does have additional need for scrutiny and hands-on. So additional licensees, additional program rollout, and oversight of those federal requirements are needed.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Thank you, Ms. Chambers. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have one question, and I don't know if Ms. Chambers can answer it, but I'll throw it out here, and maybe the committee can help me or the sponsor or somebody. What's the economic loss to Alaska if this bill doesn't become law and pass?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, there may be others on the line who could speak to a potential dollar value or what they would anticipate happening. What the urgency that the board has expressed, and I believe the sponsor has expressed as well, is that those appraisal management companies that are not federally regulated would not be able to operate in the state. And what we've seen when federal regulations are required and the state doesn't respond or is delayed in responding, is that everything from home mortgages that require a federal touch, anything that would be traditionally mortgaged by a bank, anything that would be FDIC regulated, anything that would be Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, would not be able to be regulated by a non-federally managed AMC. So there is a potential for a dramatic slowdown in the ability for appraisals to be conducted and therefore residential transactions to be conducted in the state. Perhaps those on the line could speak to an actual dollar value.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Mr. Derry, as chair of the real estate appraisers, do you have a comment on a value to Alaska that could be in jeopardy economically?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We actually do not have a dollar amount of what the impact might be if AMC legislation was not enacted, but I would certainly agree with Sarah Chambers that it could be a significant economic blow to Alaska. In Alaska, we have kind of a combination. This is something that the AMCs operate pretty much directly with financial institutions. So when you get involved with AMCs, they're going to be dealing with some of the larger financial institutions or those that operate nationally. Some of the financial institutions that are Alaska-based do not even use AMCs. We do have a member of our board that is the senior officer with McKinley Bank and Fairbanks, and she advises that their bank doesn't use an AMC. They actually order their appraisals and work through the process themselves within their bank. Some other banks do the same thing. First National does that. But what it really does is it just constricts the potential for financing for home purchases, and by extension then that would have a severe economic slowdown potentially on home financing sales in the entire residential market.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Mr. Derry, is it fair 10 to 15% of Alaska mortgages are processed through Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac? So that's the impact to the actual economy for the financing, at least it's somewhat defined like that?
Well, Madam Chair, the actual the division here is not so much who the ultimate purchaser or funder of a mortgage would be, like Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. It's the definition of the idea of a federally regulated transaction, and that's what evolved out of the Dodd-Frank Act that impacts AMCs. So this idea of a federally regulated transaction gets a bit confusing. From prior testimony in the previous committee, the gentleman from Wells Fargo had testified that he estimated 90% of their transactions would be affected if the AMC legislation was not put in place.
Thank you for
that. I've made an attempt actually to try to find out what would be the impact if we didn't have this, and unfortunately, I haven't been able to really find any concrete numbers. Nobody really tracks that. So at this point, we really don't have a way of tracking it.
Thank you for
apparently that statistic is not out there.
Thank you for those closing comments, Mr. Derry. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 155? Anyone at all? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. With that, senators, we're going to set this bill aside. We'll work with the department, the division, and with the folks who have made suggestions to modify the bill. We will also work with the sponsor to make sure that we're understanding their perspective on any changes also. If you have concerns as committee members, if you could get those to me as soon as possible, but no later than Thursday of this week. So wait, today, yeah, that's tomorrow. Let's go Friday at 5 o'clock. If you could have any amendments, we will, I made a note for my staff and took all into account the fingerprinting, the 25 to 50,000, the authority to set the fees, transitional language for regulators, and we will cover the fiscal notes at a later time. With that, I'd like to direct your attention to HB 195. And I'd like to invite Lori Wing-Heyer, the Director of the Division of Insurance, to the microphone to present the bill on behalf of the administration. Welcome to Senate Finance. Your name for the record.
Thank you. This is Lori Wing-Heyer. I'm the director for the Division of Insurance for the State of Alaska. Before you, you have HB 195. And you have probably seen a bill or a similar bill in previous legislative sessions. The bill addresses a change to credit scoring, and the change is that insurance companies and brokers will be able to use credit scoring upon renewal of a personal lines policy. So we're talking auto and homeowners, a boat, a motorcycle. This is not impacting commercial lines, nor does it impact health or life insurance. Currently, credit scoring is allowed, but it's only allowed per statute on new business. So when you go into your local agent or your local insurance company, you allow them to use, by signing, you allow them to use your credit score to determine, or your credit history to determine an insurance score, which then is used to determine your final premium. The issue has been, since 2003, that it has not been allowed without additional paperwork and each individual signing a waiver to be used upon renewal. And we have had numerous consumers call us when they receive their renewal premium and find that in some cases their insurance has doubled. It's not to say that they didn't get the notice saying, please sign this so that we can use your credit score. It's more to say that when they got it, they didn't understand it and didn't return it in time. And when the premium was computed and sent back out to them for the renewal, they were shocked at what happened to their premium. This changes that. It also puts in some extenuating life circumstances. So when your credit history is used to determine your insurance score, if you have had an event in your life that we're calling extraordinary life circumstances, and they're defined in the bill, then the consumer has a right to, for an appeal process. The original appeal goes to the insurer. If the consumer is not satisfied with that appeal, then it will come to me, to the director of the Division of Insurance, for final adjudication. A wording that was added to this particular bill, as opposed to others that you may see, is that this also provides that we have to consider what a prudent person would consider an extraordinary life circumstance. Other parts of the bill expand the notification that has to be given to consumers that an adverse action there has been taken against them, such as when they've determined their credit history to determine their insurance score, something triggered an adverse action. And that may be the credit score or the credit history, or it may be because they found something on their driving record or prior claims or something else that is impacting the premium that consumer is going to be charged. They have to tell them that they're going to use their credit. They have to tell them of an adverse action, and with an adverse action, the insurance company has to tell consumers that there is an appeal process, first through them and then up to the division. The bill further goes on to explain that the consumer will have to show proof of the adverse action in writing, that such as a deployment, death of a spouse or parent, or whatever the extraordinary event is. So the bill broadens consumer protections, but it also allows for the credit score to determine the insurance score to be used upon renewal. It's expanding the already existing part of the statute to do that, simplifying the underwriting process for consumers and insurers. I'm happy to go through the sectional, Madam Chair, but that in essence is what you have before you.
Thank you. Questions from committee members. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Boonheyer, as you look at the, in my district anyway, where you have a vast majority of the people out there don't have any credit scores, how is this going to adversely affect them?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, you cannot use a credit score if credit does not exist. That is in the bill. We did look at the governor's request at rural areas. That was one of his concerns with the previous bill. And we could not find a correlation that this would impact rural areas any more than it would urban areas. But if someone is young and does not have a credit score, for example, mm-hmm. then they cannot use that lack of a credit score in a detrimental manner.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This body passed another bill in the 29th legislature that was similar, but many consumer protections were added to that bill and brought forward here in HB 195. Could you just, from your perspective, explain the correlation between credit scores and premiums for the public to understand?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, yes. Statistics have shown, and insurance companies are probably can give you better examples than I, but that someone who manages their credit is a better insurance risk. They take care of their property better. They're not tend to have the accidents or the tickets that someone who's not managing their credit may have. Their auto may be in better repair. It's hard to see, but there is a correlation between a credit score and perhaps someone we would consider responsible as to someone who is not responsible with their credit score and consequently their insurance products.
Senator Michicki.
No, that's fine, Madam Chair. I understand the correlation, and I think some struggle with it, but it's similar to the other uses of a credit score. I mean, there is a direct relationship, and I appreciate the explanation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wingheim.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could we see some? I appreciate the comments that the Senator made. Can we see something that actually shows a correlation? Is there statistical information that's available to us that we can understand?
Through the Chair, Senator Stevens, I will see what I can find. I know that they're in logarithms, so it's really hard to see it, but there is
that's
no...
understandable.
Yes, but there's no doubt. There have been studies done by many institutes, the NEIC, the federal government, and there is a correlation that exists. But I will find you some of those studies, what I can.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Ms. Wingheim, could we walk through a sectional? We do have folks waiting online. We'll take them as they signed up in different areas of the state, so everyone's treated equal. So we might bounce from LIO to LIO, but if we could try to move through the sectional quickly, we do have folks waiting to testify.
Certainly, Madam Chair. Section 1 provides for the disclosures that insurance companies shall disclose to the consumer that they are going to use the credit information in determining the insurance premium upon renewal. Section 2 is where a consumer is given notice of the adverse action by the insurance company and that they must show them the reasonable exceptions that may be made, how the consumer may request an exemption or the appeal process, and that the request must be made within 60 days of when they receive their renewal notice. Section 3 is adding non-renewal. The previous statute addressed applications for new business and cancellation. It did not address non-renewal, and we have added that to Section 3. It also goes on to say that if you use an insurance company is not required to use a credit history to determine an insurance score, but if they do, then they must revisit the credit score within 24 months to see if there's improvement. Admittedly, it could be a deterioration, but it's the premise is that they will revisit it within 24 months if they're going to use credit scoring. Section 4, this is basically the reason for HB 195 before you. This is where we take out the need for the waiver, the written waiver to use credit history upon renewal. It goes on to show that it cannot, again, that credit history by itself cannot be used to cancel, deny, non-renew when rating a personal lines auto insurance policy. Section 5 provides for the extraordinary life circumstances, including the appeal process. Extraordinary life circumstances is a catastrophe, a serious illness or injury, the death of a spouse, child, or parent, divorce or involuntary interruption of spousal support, identity theft, loss of employment for more than 3 months, a military overseas deployment, and other extraordinary life circumstances where a prudent person would consider an exception to the consumer in their insurance score. Section 5 then goes on to provide how the appeal process would work, including the documents that must be provided and the timelines that have to be adhered to, not just by the consumer, but also by the insurance company and the Division of Insurance in looking at these appeals. Section 6 clarifies that the appeal process will be handled by the Division of Insurance and not by the Office of Administrative Hearings. I'm happy to go into Section 6 more, Madam Chair, if you would like, because that is a rather lengthy section, but it does, piece paragraph by paragraph, provide the appeal process and the timelines involved.
Thank you. I think that we're good. Are there questions from committee members on the how the bill functions? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just could you clarify Section 2? When does that 60 days begin? When an adverse action is taken, when the notice is sent, when the individual receives notice, knowing how things often take a lot of time in Alaska, when does that 60 days start?
Senator Stevens, could you give us a page and a line number?
I'm just looking at Section 2 in the sectional analysis.
Is it Section 2 in the bill, or you're just following the sectional analysis?
I'm just looking at the sectional analysis.
Ms. Winkheyer.
Madam Chair, Senator Stevens, the time frame is triggered when the insured, the consumer, receives the notice from the insurance company. So it provides for, and that is depending on the medium, because a lot of our consumers are now receiving it electronic, but if it is still by the USPS, then it allows for the date they receive it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Other questions from committee members? Thank you, Ms. Winkheyer.
Thank you.
With that, I'd like to open the public hearing on House Bill 195, an act relating to insurer actions based on credit scores and insurance scores at insurance policy renewal. Let's see who was here first around our state. Here in Juneau, I'd like to invite Christy Babcock to the microphone. Christy, welcome to Senate Finance. If you could identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christy Babcock. I'm a State Farm agent in Kenai. I have 9 employees and have worked in this industry for 23 years. Thank you for the opportunity to hear HB 195 and for me to voice support for it. You may remember that HB 195 passed the House 39-0 last year. A companion bill, Senate Bill 98, passed the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee last year. A similar bill, sponsored by Senator Huggins, passed the legislature by a large margin in 2016, but was unfortunately vetoed. My comments will be brief because many of you are already familiar with the issues this bill addresses. My customers see the impact of the current law every day. I dedicate one staff member to deal exclusively with the difficulties this law creates. Customers first hear about the impacts of the current law when we call them to let them know their rates are going to dramatically increase. It's not because of their driving, it's not because of any accidents or tickets. Their rate, compared to the rate they received 2 years prior when we first wrote their policy, is going to dramatically increase because of state law, we can't use all the same components that were used in their original rate. We let them know their rate is changing because of that law. It's not a simple conversation. It's not easy for them to understand. We go on to explain that current law, and I might recall for some of you that it's been since 03 that this legislature decided that credit was a valid component in determining insurance rates. It's one of many factors. The type of car someone drives, their driving record, their accidents, their tickets, and it's not someone's credit score that is used. It's certain credit components highly regulated by the Division of Insurance that are allowed to be used by an insurance company in determining that rate. So we explained there is an option for them to give us permission to use their credit for their renewal rate so that we can hopefully avoid the sometimes 30 to 35% increase. If we can be successful in reaching the client, explaining the situation to them, helping them understand the situation, getting the form to them, getting the form back from them, and doing all of this in time before their renewal, then the customer can be relieved of the rate increase for the upcoming year. Then the next year, we get to do the same thing with the same customer for the same policy. Besides being confusing and frustrating for our customers, there are other problems as well. It is hard to reach people. They're working. They're on the slope. They're out of state. They're on vacation. They're taking care of their children. If we do miss getting the re-rate done at any annual renewal, under current law, they end up paying more than they should because of Alaska statute. Despite how confusing and burdensome the process is for the customer, we work every day to overcome the volatile rate situation the current law creates. However, sometimes we can't reach the customer, and their rate goes up, and they find out too late for us to obtain their written permission because Alaska law doesn't allow us to do it after that renewal date. That's really hard for customers to understand. What I hear from customers is this: can't you please just charge me the rate I deserve? I shopped around and I chose you. Why do I have to go through this cumbersome process every year just in order to make sure I don't get overcharged? They say, you know, I've worked hard to have a good driving record, my credit's okay. Why has my rate gone up? It should be noted the law is only this way in the state of Alaska, where some components can be used at initial business, again, decided upon this legislature in 03, but different rates get used at the renewal, meaning the credit history. Certain components, highly regulated by the Division of Insurance, have to be stripped out. There's no public policy served by the current law. I've been asked by some, what would be the impact of HB 195 on the public? First, it would alleviate the dramatic swings in rates, which to customers seems a little like bait and switch, using a certain set of components at initial business, and then at renewal, the rules change. Secondly, it would eliminate the frustrating and very cumbersome process of getting a manual waiver signed at each renewal by automating the renewal process and allowing the components that are used in the original policy to also be used at the policy's renewal. Finally, HB 195 would allow customers to shop with confidence, knowing that there's stability in the rating factors, stability between the factors that go into the rates initially and the factors that go into the rates at renewal. In closing, as I stated at the outset, similar legislation was passed in 2016. In fact, it was identical to HB 195, except that HB 195 now adds an appeal procedure for the extenuating life circumstances determination. I'm very thankful this bill is being heard today. That prior bill, Senate Bill 127 from 2 years ago, was sponsored by Senator Huggins. It was co-sponsored by Senator Giesel, Senator Costello, Senator McKinnon, Senator Stevens, Senator McChicky, Senator Bishop, Senator Meyer, and Representative Millett. That prior bill was heard in Senate State Affairs, Senate Labor and Commerce, and House Labor and Commerce. This year, a companion to HB 195, Senate Bill 98, has already been heard and passed out of Senate Labor and Commerce. And as mentioned before, HB 195, the bill before you here, passed the House last year 39-0. With all due respect, I suggest this legislation has been exhaustively vetted, and I would ask that you please consider passing it out and moving it forward today. Thank you for listening, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and very good to see you back in general.
Thank you,
thank you for being here. So the only difference you say has to do with the last bill, and we went through extensively, was the appeal process. Was there no appeal process in the last bill that we passed?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, there was an appeal process in the prior bill. The difference between that bill and this bill is that the appeal process has some additional consumer protections. Rather than the appeal being only going to the insurer, now there's an additional step that if the customer is unsatisfied with the determination of the insurer, the appeal goes to the director of insurance. And that is the difference between the two bills.
Thank you, Christian.
Thank you.
Further questions from committee members? Brief at ease. We're back on the record. The next person waiting to testify, and again, I'm using the time date that from our legislative team, George Pierce in Kasiloff. Mr. Pierce, welcome to Senate Finance.
Yes, thanks for taking my testimony. You know, you guys come up with some bills, but this is a Jim Dandy. I'm definitely against this stupid bill. Massachusetts, Hawaii, and California, this practice has been banned, and they have shown that credit-based insurer scores don't factor in your job, your income history, your gender, or any other personal information. This will unfairly penalize those who have suffered medical or an economic crisis. Example, 10,000 Alaskans losing their oil job due to bad economy, crisis, and negatively impact minorities and low-income consumers. Also, the federal trade consumer, unable to create a rating model that would accurately and effectively predict risk while addressing the disparity between economic and racial groups. An analyst by NerdWallet of car insurance rates found that having poor credit rather than excellent credit increased insurance prices between 76% and 123% in the state, in the three-state study. Driving records and other factors are better predictors of risks than credit scores. You know, this is what will be used for insurance. Insurers can use your credit-based insurance score. 40% payment history, 30% outstanding debt, 15% credit history linked, 10% pursuit of new credit, 5% credit mix. It's not based on good driving records. You know, you people sitting there taking all this information against the Alaskans, you know, you should not move this bill at all. Put in the trash where it goes. Thanks for taking my testimony.
Mr. Pierce, thank you for calling in to Senate Finance today. Are there questions from committee members? Thank you, Mr. Pierce.
Thank you.
The next person waiting to testify from Anchorage, and we do tend to take folks in-state versus out-of-state if they're not on invited testimony. Mr. Ted Moninski? Ted, are you there in the Anchorage LIO or off-net, I see?
Yeah, good morning, Madam Chairman. Thank you. Yes, I am off-net, and I appreciate being able to speak to you very briefly this morning on House Bill 195. My comments reflect only my own opinion. I am offering my qualified support for HB 195, as I did for the previous legislation that that was referred to in earlier testimony. I say qualified because, as the committee knows and as the legislature knows, the devil is always in the details. I want to mention to you that some of the representations that you've heard didn't apply in my case. I'm one of those folks that you heard of from Ms. Wing-Hire, who had his credit history used for initial rating of his personal insurance policies, and then upon renewal was surprised to find out that my premium had gone up approximately 30%. I had inquired, found out what happened, But here's what I want you to understand and why I'm suggesting to you that you take care in how you draft your legislation. Some of the testimony that you've heard would have you believe that even though it's cumbersome, there is a waiver process out there today, and if you use the waiver process effectively, you can continue upon renewal to still have your credit history considered. That was not true for me. I did some research. I found out about the waiver process. I read the statute and talked to my carrier about it and requested in writing that I be allowed to execute a waiver so they could continue to consider my credit history. I was told by my carrier that that waiver was not available to me upon renewal, and the reason given, if I understand it correctly, was that the rate plan that had been filed by this carrier with the Division of Insurance simply removed that option, and therefore it was not available. I think that might have been just a little bit of sleight of hand, but in any event, I mean, I'm not a technical insurance person, so I can't say. But I do believe, though, that we need to be really careful about the language in HB 195. For example, if you and the legislature ultimately and the governor eventually approve and enact HB 195, can the insurance carrier tell me, oh, that's true, but only if you're a new applicant after the adoption of the new statute, so that in order to be able to get the benefit of what you're considering today, I would actually have to start over again, give up all of my longevity benefits that I have in order to avail myself of the new renewal process. I think that would be unfortunate and would not be what you intended. So, again, my support for the bill is I believe that this change should be made, but I believe it needs to be implemented on a fair and non-discriminatory basis and should be immediately available to all existing customers after the bill is enacted. Thank you.
Thank you. If I could invite Director Winghire to the microphone, I'd like that answered now on the record. Because we can craft an amendment that makes that possible so that all consumers are treated fairly, I believe. So unless there's something federally going on that I don't know.
Again, Lori Winghire. I'm the director of the Division of Insurance. I do not see any reason with the way the statute or the bill is drafted that would imply that someone has to go back through the application process. In fact, we've removed the word applicant and substituted the word consumer so that it applies not to new business, not just to new business, but renewal business if and when the bill becomes effective.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members? Just to clearly state that for the record. Ted, I believe we've addressed your concerns and that the intent as this moves forward, certainly from Senate Finance, is that all consumers would be treated equitably in this process. Senator Michicki.
Madam Chair, as long as Ms. Winghire is here, we had a discussion a minute ago, and if I can ask her to clarify, please.
Please.
We talked about the differences. My understanding that there was not the right to appeal in the prior. I don't really want to talk about the past bill. I want to talk about this bill. In this bill, there's a right to appeal, and a key difference is that the appeal goes to the director, and the standard has been changed to what a prudent person would consider to be fair and reasonable. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, that is exactly right. The appeal process was at the sole discretion of the insurance company. And that was one of the governor's concerns in vetoing the bill, that the insurance company did not have sole discretion to determine if an extraordinary life circumstance was actually impacting that person. The second part was giving notice of the appeal so that the consumers knew their rights.
Perfect. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said that was one of the reasons that was given for the veto. Were there others? And if there were, what were they?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. The governor wanted to ascertain that people were given the notice of the appeal process, that the appeal went to the director if it could not be resolved with the insurance company, and we put in the language for the prudent person so that if there was an extraordinary life circumstance that was not specifically addressed in the statute, a prudent person would agree that that event did happen and did have an impact on the credit score.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we made some changes in this from the last bill, and you've been added, your position has been added in in the appeal process. Is that an onerous responsibility? Do you have any idea how many cases you may receive? Can you at all quantify that?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, we don't. But we do know we have received maybe two or three calls a month from consumers from different insurance companies upon their renewal. So we really don't have an idea. We are thinking that the way the bill is drafted, that insurance companies will do all they can to make sure that the appeal does not come as far as the director. But in the event they do, we think we are staffed to handle them.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Thank you, Ms. Wingheyer. We want to move on. We are in public testimony. I just wanted to make sure that we cleared those comments up. I appreciate the additional questions from committee members. Mr. Monsky, did you have anything else for consideration of the committee in regards to your testimony?
No, Madam Chairman. Thank you very much for the opportunity, and I appreciate your inquiry.
Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today. The next person waiting to testify is Gary Stranigan, Liberty Mutual Insurance Company out of Seattle. Gary, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record. My name is Gary Stranigan. I simply want to commend the bill to the committee. I think the policy questions have been well sorted through in the course of the various iterations of the bill, and I think we're in really good shape. Consideration is that it's a good idea to move it without amendment so that we can put it on the governor's desk.
Are there questions from
committee
members?
That's all I have for you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them from the committee perspective.
Are there questions from committee members? Mr. Stranigan, thank you for testifying before the Senate Finance Committee. I do have two others signed up that are in the room that say question only. Does that remain true for Armin Feliciano? Just questions, okay. And Cinda Smith?
Yes,
just questions, okay. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 195? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Fiscal note, the title is Insurer Use of Credit Histories and Scores. The Department is Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Insurance Operations is the appropriation. Allocation is Insurance Operations, OMB component numbers 354. It's a zero fiscal note. And it's a long analysis, but if you bear with me, the bill analysis allows an insurer to use a consumer credit history or insurance score to underwrite or rate the consumer's policy at renewal. It also provides for exemptions from using credit history. This bill modifies existing statute and does not have an anticipated fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Bishop, I am recalling through the queue that I failed to recognize you. Senator Bishop, did you have a question for any of those that testified or otherwise?
I just got a quick comment. I mean, Section 5 is the section where the meat of the bill is, and the last bullet in there, Ms. Wingheyer. I mean, it's just my comment. You're gonna make sure this is a consumer protection bill. You're gonna, you know, you're the judge, jury, and executioner on this one. And as a former commissioner, I always tried to look at it objectively, but I always had the people's best interest at heart. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. With that, amendments are due to the committee by 5 p.m. this Friday. Is there anything else to come before the committee? Seeing and hearing none, we're adjourned.